You can't get blood out of a turnip.
Good God, Moshe said. Where did all that energy go?
At first guess, inside our little friend.
How many grams of plutonium?
Russ said. They're still not talking, but they acted nervous as hell. I don't think they have grams on their collective mind. I think it's tons, kilotons, megatons.
TNT equivalent, Russ said.
Jack nodded. They want to evacuate the island.
Megatons? Russ said, his eyes widening. What have we been sitting on?
Like I say, they're not talking numbers. Besides, I have a suspicion that they're also not talking about the thing blowing up. I think they want to be free to nuke it to atoms if it looks dangerous.
If...
Jack looked around the room. I suspect we'll lose some of our crew here, too. Can't say I'd blame anyone for leaving. Moshe broke the silence.
What? When it's just getting interesting?
They weren't going to move 200,000 Samoans just by saying, you're in danger, you have to leave. For one thing, the independent in independent Samoa applied mostly to America. Anybody who wanted to live under Uncle Sam's thumb could take the ferry to American Samoa. There was also the matter of where to put them. American Samoa was dismally crowded. New Zealand and Australia were virtually closed, having absorbed more than 100,000 Samoans over the past century, and that emigration, of course, siphoned off the ones who wanted to leave the traditional lifestyle. The other islands in the group were mostly impenetrable jungle or volcanic waste. Savai'i had 60,000 people crowded into a necklace of towns along the inhabitable coast and didn't want more. Besides, most Samoans were deeply religious and somewhat fatalistic. If God chose to take them, he would. And it would be disrespectful to the point of sacrilege to leave their homes with generations of ancestors buried in the front yards. Pollsters said that even if the United States completely paid for relocation, they'd only move about 20% of the population. Samoans pointed out that it would be a lot simpler to move the artifact. The land didn't belong to Poseidon, let alone to the U.S. government. It was leased. The family that owned the land could evict them. Jack applied his skills as a negotiator to that aspect of the problem. He had a meeting with the local village elders, the Fono, and pointed out that evicting them, while a defensible act, had its negative side. It would be, in effect, capitulating to U.S. nuclear might. It would be a breach of agreement, an agreement that involved far more money and prestige than the village had ever known, and some would see that as a humiliation. Besides, if they cooperated, Jack would, in gratitude, renovate both schools and build a new church. He never mentioned Poseidon. The deal had been with him. It wound up costing the renovation of two more churches and the sponsorship of a celebratory feast, but honor won the day. The fact that the Samoan national government wanted the village to evict Poseidon had worked to Jack's advantage. The primacy of village law was written into the Constitution, and there was no question that in matters of real estate, a touchy subject on the finite island, village law trumped the feds. The elders took pleasure in reaffirming this principle. The rebuilding was profound. The dome over the experimental area, besides providing environmental isolation, was to serve as a double blast confinement volume, a dome of titanium inside a dome of steel. Jack and Russ and Jan united in opposing the extra expense and complication. If the artifact decided to explode, the domes might as well be made of cardboard. The government, still under the aegis of NASA, but with much more money and clout than the agency possessed, agreed that they were probably right. The double dome was a just-in-case precaution. Also just-in-case were the manacles that supposedly held the artifact down, attached to arm-thick cables that were deeply anchored in bedrock. They had calculated the amount of force it had taken to lift the artifact off its cradle. The manacles could hold down 4 to 6 times as much. No one who had seen the airy, effortless grace with which the artifact had floated up would bet on the cables. It was Jan's turn to run the show. Having scalded and frozen and zapped